I have always known fear. She was the fourth sister and my most intimate acquaintance.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you the updates you really want on all those books you see on BookTok and Bookstagram. And we help busy young professionals like us figure out if they should really make time to read them. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. And today we are bringing you a book that I was lucky enough to get in as an advanced reader copy. And as soon as it was published, I was like, oh my God, you guys have to read this book. And then immediately now when you walk in Barnes & Noble, it's like right at the front of the store. So it's getting a lot of popularity. And it is Medusa's Sisters by Lauren J.A. Baer. And it's her debut novel. And like, holy moly, it's a doozy for a first book because it is the retelling of the Greek myth of Medusa, but from the perspective of her two Gorgon sisters. So it starts back at like the three of their births and works all the way up. And they're like not Gorgons when they're born. So it like talks about their story, what it's like to be like, they're not quite demigods, but they're immortal, descended from creatures of, you know, the under, I don't know what.
Titans. They're descended from Titans.
Basically. And how they traverse into the human world and all the things they get into and what gets them turned into Gorgons. And you know how the story ends, Medusa. It's not a great ending for her. And it kind of talks about her sister's point of view on the whole thing. But trigger warning, rape, sexual assault. It's a dark book, but it's really well written. So don't let that dissuade you.
For those of you who are not Greek mythology buffs, Medusa's story of how she becomes Medusa and has the snake hair and the stone eyes and everything is that she's raped and Athena ends up doing that to her, and there are different interpretations of how that actually happens. So this book is one interpretation, but obviously that moment is still because of rape. So know that going in.
Also, like, if you've seen Percy Jackson, Medusa loses her head in every retelling. So, yeah. Like, I guess trigger warning for that, too. Sibling loss.
Yes. It's a very emotional book.
Okay, well, before we get into it, do you guys have reviews?
Yes. I want to read mine last.
Okay. Well, then I will go because Casey wants to go last. I found a 4-star review on Goodreads, and it just says, wow. This story was one for the women.
Facts.
Perfect segue. I have a 4-star review from Storygraph, and it says, I will always love stories of monstrous women.
Aww. We all went so warm and fuzzy.
Are monstrous women fuzzy? I don't know, but...
They said they love it, and we do too. So my review is a 5-star review, and it is, I mean, it's my child. I have to love it, right? From Lauren J.A. Baer. And I thought that was so cute.
I did say that originally because I was, you know, reviewing it before it was out.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was so cute that she was one of the first reviews.
That's adorable.
Yeah. Yeah,
I screenshotted it like so long ago because I was like, I'm reading that one.
Well, we all read pretty high rated reviews, short and sweet, but the overall Goodreads rating is 4.3 out of 5 and the Amazon rating is 4.6 out of 5. So it's a very well received book. Where do you guys fall?
So if you are a Throne of Glass fan, I mentioned in our last episode, I gave this book 4.9 stars. I don't care if that's picky and stupid. You know, it's our podcast. I get to decide what I rate the book.
And, I mean, your co-hosts don't think you're picky and stupid.
Yeah, you guys, it's a totally fair opinion. I'm still going to do it. I loved the book. It is one of those books that has lived in my head since I read it. I will never get it out of my head. It is deeply emotional, complicated, brutal, but emotional and worth it. Like, just all the best adjectives about reading, it embodies them all. The only thing I didn't like about it, the reason I subtracted my like 0.1 of a point, is that one of the sisters' perspective is told from first person and the other is told from third person. And it literally drove me up a wall. I was so annoyed by it. So it's a huge compliment to the book that I still loved it.
Oh my God. In that same vein, I gave it 4.5. And that was my reasoning for giving it 0.5 off, is because that drove me up a wall as like a journalist and editor. The editor in me wanted to say, stick to one point of view, one perspective.
It was just for no reason.
I'm a more sophisticated reader, so I gave it 5 stars. Okay. Because honestly, that helped me tell the two perspectives apart. While did I love it? No, but it like definitely helped me differentiate the two sisters that were telling the story.
Different people. I didn't think you needed it.
Yeah. I don't know. At first, I didn't know much about them, you know? By the end, yeah, but I don't know. I gave it 5 stars. I read this as soon as it was published. I went and bought the hard copy. Sorry to let you guys down, was so close to having an interview with the author, and just, you know, the go-between was too much and it fell through. But we're still bringing it to you because I loved it so much. I forced them to read it and said, one way or another, we are doing an episode on this. And
maybe if you guys just at the author enough times, you can force her to do an interview with us.
I don't want to interview authors after we like discuss their books. I don't know.
I think we should. I think leave this in and have the fans do the work for us.
Okay, Mom. You heard it here. It was just difficult because she was getting stupid popular and I was like going through the publisher rep who was going to her and going back and forth, and it just like never worked out right. So apologies, but we loved it. I loved the book.
Yeah. Cool. Well, our first discussion question, is this book more plot or character driven?
I would say, I guess, character driven.
I think character. The sisters in the book, and the author like does such a good job of like, I think, creating the feeling of fate, which seems like it would be more plot, but it's like, it's so well done that you can see how like all the characters' choices create what ultimately happens. And outside of when Medusa is raped, everything else in the book is because of their choices. Like, they and their even response to it, like, it is them acting and creating the plot and not the plot acting on them.
And you just get to know them so intimately.
Yes.
Through their thoughts and emotions, that like without that deep character development, this book is not what it is.
Yeah, yes. I would agree. I would say character driven as well. The only reason why I could even see an argument for plot is because I'm a huge Greek mythology, Roman mythology nerd. So I knew kind of the flashpoints of where the story intersects with some like very popular Greek mythology fables and their tales. So I knew what was going to happen in those points. Cause I was like, oh, they're in Crete and it's this princess. Oh, I know her story. So I know how it ends. Mm-hmm. So like, obviously that plot point has to be hit at some point, but yes, everything happens because of how Lauren writes it. It's very character driven for their story themselves.
Yeah. And that's what I was getting at. It's like, it feels so inevitable because the story has already been written, but the characters really take you on the journey still. And I just really appreciated that. So what about the pacing? How long did it take you to read?
Despite how much I was obsessed with this book, it still took me quite a while to read because it is a heavy topic, like a heavy book. And it is, I want to say, a fairly sophisticated writing style.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy read, but it's worth the read. So I think it probably took me a week or so.
I think I had a very similar experience. I did think the beginning was pretty slow. And they spend a lot of time in Crete. And I think they could have spent a little less time in Crete. Also, some of the character shifts were like, sometimes I felt like they came at the right time. And sometimes it just like felt a little disjointed. I feel like, but I only felt like that for like the first maybe like 50 to 100 pages. And then I felt like the book really hit its stride. So I think it actually took me less than a week. I think it probably took me like 4 days. But also once you get to like the sort of ending part of the book, I was like glued to the book. Like I could not put it down.
Yeah, I had a very similar reading experience, but surprisingly, out of all of us, it took me the longest to read because I just looked at my Goodreads and it was 10 days for me to read it from start to finish. But to be fair, I'm pretty sure I put it down for like 5 days once I first started it because it was kind of like a really slow build at the beginning. And then I read the last 50% in a day.
Yeah, I would compare it to Madeline Miller. Not only because she does Greek mythology retellings, but also because her books are slow builds. And so I felt like it was sort of a similar reading experience where like the characters eventually really like create that like enwrapped, like trapped, obsessed feeling with the book. But it takes a while for like the character development to get there.
Well, would y'all watch a movie or TV show of this book?
No. There's already too many retellings out there in the cinematic world, and I feel like hers comes through best in written word. And there's also some like poetry that comes into the book. I think this is perfect the way it is.
I think it could be done. I would watch a movie of it. However, if it is not in the hands of, in my opinion, a female director, and it is not with a really great production company, I think it's not even worth it. Like, to me, this should be an A24 film because this is like a complete character-driven reimagining, redoing, and it would have to be super cinematic. So I would watch it, but like, personally, like if Hulu or Amazon picks this up, it's a skip for me because I just don't think that they do that kind of movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think it has to be a very specific director with a very specific production company with the author on board and helping to write it. Mm-hmm. And the help of screenwriters who are also women. So the writing staff need to be comprised of a very diverse group. This would have to be done in a very specific way in order for me to watch it and trust it. But I also kind of agree with Caitlin, like this topic and this story is super hard to watch almost because it's hard to read and there's some very graphic points.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see it not translating well into a movie format.
To be more explicit for the listeners, the rape scene in this book is very graphic. It is very hard to read. It is very well done, but it is one of the most brutal scenes I have ever read. And that, I think, is why it gives us all pause, is I think to make this book a movie, they would have to reimagine that because I don't think the way it is written would translate well to screen, and they would have to rethink that part of the book.
But it would almost have to happen in order for the story to be told.
Well, that scene has to occur, but I don't think you can like portray it, put it on screen as graphically as it is described in the book. Or else it's just like, it's a lot to see. Like, it's a lot to read, which means it would be even more to see.
I get it. Yeah. It's just that, again, like, that would have to be very well done.
Yeah, very which is well why written. You would need an amazing production team that is like seriously thinking through that, which I think is kind of hard to come by in modern media.
Well, it's time for our favorite part of the episode, Busy Girl Ratings. What did y'all rate it?
I was a little torn between a 3 and a 4, but I ultimately went with a 4 just because it's so worth the read that, like, I think you'll find the time if you want to find the time. It's not a 5 because it is pretty, I don't know, intellectually written, like, and the topics are hard, like we keep saying, but I'm going to go with a 4 because it's worth the time.
See, I was between a 4 and a 5 because I love an intellectual book, but I ultimately went for 4 just because the beginning is a bit slower. And I do think it takes a minute to get into. The reason it's not lower for me is like the same reason. I just think it's like so worth picking up.
Yeah, I'm more like Caitlin. I'm between a 3 and a 4, so I'll just do 3.5 because I think the content is, well, I think it's a necessary read of like any woman I think would enjoy this book, but it's very hard to read. And I don't know. It's a slow pacing for me. That's what gets me. And then the content wise.
Yeah. Fair. Well, that brings us to the spoiler section of this book. This book features so many like mythologies, so many different characters, and very surprising, I think, like intersections of story and characters. So let's get into it. Go read the book if you haven't already and then come back.
All right, let's talk about the Gorgon sisters, who aren't Gorgons when it starts. They're like immortal looking human girls. And I feel like that's something we've encountered a few times. We've read some Greek mythology retellings, and you know, the main story you hear about within the Greek mythology is not always from their origin. So how do you think this kind of compared to some of the other Greek retellings you've read?
I feel I have been very blessed. I think that Greek retellings have become extremely popular, but I've also read a lot of good ones. Like, I brought up Madeline Miller earlier, which we've read, Circe for this podcast. I think she does amazing Greek retellings. Also, I have read a book by Pat Barker, which is a Greek mythology retelling, which is also very good. Also a feminist retelling of a Greek story. And so I think like the bar was very high for this book, which makes it even more shocking that it reached it. I felt like this book like totally like hung in with those authors.
I 100% agree. It like totally reminds me of Circe. I really like that we're seeing the surgence of female authors writing a Greek mythology from the female perspective, because when I learned Greek mythology in Latin class in middle school and high school, it was all these like Zeus raped or had sex with this lady, she had a kid, Hera was mad, and it was always written from the man's perspective by male authors. So you never got a truly feminine perspective. And so to completely flip the story on its head and say like, no, Medusa is not the villain. Medusa is just misunderstood. And to give, it's even though it's not in her perspective, it's from her sister's perspective for this whole book, you're giving her story a female touch and a female perspective, which I so, so appreciate. And I hope that more authors do this with other Greek retellings.
Yeah, I mean, I was a Percy Jackson kid, so like I just love Greek mythology in general. I really appreciate now having an adult point of view on some of these, as Catherine's saying, as it's becoming more popular to retell these myths from what a woman might be thinking, because you do get Hercules is great, Zeus is great, heroes, yay. But like, I don't know, like Medusa didn't ask to be turned into a Gorgon or get her head chopped off or anything. So I don't know. It was a really lovely telling from the perspective of the sisters. And I also really love Madeline Miller and the people who are trying to emulate them right now. If they do it right, like, I'm all in.
Yeah, we can never get enough. I'm like, give me more. If you're going to do it well, give me more. So this book, as we've mentioned already, and it's a spoiler section, she should already know, is told from the perspective of Medusa's sisters. Sthena, is that what we landed on? And Ariel. Okay. Greek names, excuse me. What did you think? We've already touched on this a little. What did you think of their perspectives and how the story unraveled from their perspective?
Okay, at first, they are not likable.
No, not at all.
Neither of them. You're like, what the heck?
Yeah. They're complete polar opposites.
The right. Pushover and the bitch.
But I feel like if you've grown up with sisters or siblings in general, it makes sense. And you understand that, like, while everybody sees them as three, they see themselves as individuals, but still, like, love each other very much, which is, it really gets into the sibling relationship and the complexities of that. And so, yeah, you usually don't like Sthena or Uriel, but you understand them and how they view Medusa and their motives for everything they do. And I ended up by the end really liking having the two perspectives.
Yeah. Sphino is very older child energy. Uriel's very middle child energy. And then Medusa's very younger child energy. And it all makes sense as this, because they are a triad and like everyone thinks of them as a three. Like they're never separated. And even in some of their own minds, they're always a triad. And like that they always are connected and they will forever be connected. So it's very interesting to see independence in their perspectives. I've already said I didn't really like that it flipped from first person to third person from the different Sphino and Uriel's perspectives. That was a little jarring at times. And sometimes their perspectives were pretty similar towards the end. But for the most part, could differentiate between them because they are complete polar opposites. Like Uriel hates her family, hates her life and the choices and stuff like that, and is actively trying to escape it. And then Sphino really just wants to keep the family together and be kind of a mother hen to Medusa, because it turns out Medusa is not immortal. She's a mortal born of an immortal, but also kind of not mortal.
She's long lived, but can be killed.
Yes.
Yeah, very similar to you guys. They're both super unlikable, but the book just like really pulls you in. Something that I thought was really well pulled off is you never really end up liking them. Like Uriel, especially her reaction, like after Medusa's raped and the way it plays out is like very hard to read. But you also like just appreciate the complexity of it. Like I think I wrote in my Goodreads review, like this author does not pull punches, and that makes a really interesting story. I think this is one of the first retellings I've read that I think truly encapsulates how immortality changes your perspective, because everything and every situation that they're in is like viewed as temporary. Like everything is move onable from, and that is just crazy to a mortal, because like those defining moments in your lifespan like never leave you, but immortals live differently
until the big bad happens. Yeah. And then they're like, Oh, so this is what it's like to have something permanently affect you.
Yeah, and then they're Gorgons. Yeah, and they do not handle it well.
Yeah.
They don't know how to deal with it, like you said.
But it's also super interesting because they do live differently from the Olympians. Like, they're immortals. They come from Titans and creatures of Titans, but they're not the Olympians that you think of, like Zeus, Hera, Athena, Poseidon, you know, them. So they do differentiate themselves from them. And so they have more consequences for their actions, unlike the Olympians, who do not have consequences for their actions because they kind of rule everything. So it's very interesting to see how they live in this society that's been ruled by Olympians who have a mutual like peace between the immortals, but they don't trust them and they definitely use them.
This is where it reminded me of Circe a lot, because Circe was a nymph and Circe dealt a lot with like powerlessness in that novel and like coming into her own power. And I felt like they had a very similar journey where even though they were more powerful than humans, they were still powerless in comparison to other immortal beings. And so, yeah, they had like a very different like power dynamic.
We've kind of talked about the sisters and how they differ and how we get to travel along with them through this journey and their different perspectives. But before this, did you even know that Medusa had two sisters?
Nope.
No, I've always just seen Medusa as the person whose head gets chopped off and is always like this villain. And like, I've watched a lot of movies where she just gets her head chopped off of Perseus, and I'm sure like a few other movies I'm forgetting, and then Percy Jackson, it's the first book. So I never knew she had sisters.
Yes, I agree. I think most depictions focus on Percy's hero journey instead of Medusa. I also like, so I did know that Medusa was raped and then Athena turns her into a Gorgon, but I didn't, a lot of people actually don't know that. Like, the story of Medusa is more commonly thought of as the story of her death and like not the story of her becoming a Gorgon. But I had read
Why she was raped and why Athena chose to punish her for the rape. Like, yeah.
Because I had seen online some like feminist reclaimings of the idea that like it was intended as a punishment. Like, I read some like short interpretations that were like obviously like told a very different story than the one in this book, but they were like, you know, their idea was like Athena found Medusa crying and like turned her into something that like could never be hurt again. You know, like, it's just like I had read retellings. But yeah, a lot of people don't even know or think about Medusa's earlier life, earlier story.
No, I like loosely knew there were other Gorgons in Greek mythology. I didn't realize it was like a sibling thing.
Yeah, I didn't either.
No.
No idea they were all punished together.
And yeah, even, so I appreciated the new knowledge.
And even Casey, you saying like her being raped, I didn't learn it that way. I learned it that they had a consensual relationship, her and Poseidon, and Athena, because she's Poseidon's enemy, cursed Medusa to look unattractive to him. So I even learned a completely different story, and I don't know if that's actually a true retelling. That's just how I learned it in middle school. So I was even like, I heard the other stories of her being raped and then the punishment, but I there's even, I think, retellings out there that she's not even raped.
Yeah.
So Poseidon is this big hero in most retellings of Greek mythology. However, he's a problem in this book. So Uriel kind of develops this crush on Poseidon. They're both creatures of the sea. And Uriel, unlike the others, doesn't want to live among the humans. She wants to live on Olympus. So she's like, here's my ticket. She develops this huge crush on him. And while we're understanding that she's like, I like this guy, we meet the princess on Crete, who ends up getting impregnated by Zeus and murdered by Hera, basically. And Uriel's watching this like, oh, well, like, mm-hmm. what did you think about what this added to the story and the stakes and just the whole experience on Crete?
I thought it was super interesting where the end of it, because like as readers, we kind of see like this is the consequence of messing with Olympians. And like we know that that's a consequence and that they should have learned from that experience. And even they say it in the books in the perspective retelling, because they're almost retelling, they're telling their story. So they say, we should have seen this as a warning sign. We should have known that this was a, this is what happens when you mess with Olympians.
Mm-hmm. I liked it for that reason. It was clearly like, hey, this is what happens. And I already knew the story of Crete. I think probably all of us did. And so I liked getting to experience that story from their perspective. Also, I feel like that sets up sort of the main difference between Medusa and Uriel, is because Uriel watches this and becomes the very like calculated, logical pursuer that she becomes. Like what she learned from this experience is like, if you want to fuck with the gods, you have to be very smart about it.
Mm-hmm.
Medusa really does not learn from this. And in this retelling, at least, you know, focuses on the passion and like the ultimate happy ending that like, or like quote unquote happy. I don't know that the princess really ends up being happy, but you know, the princess ends up being on Olympus. And then Medusa still enters into her like, you know, passion, love relationship with Athena.
Yeah, and then Athena's like, oh shit.
Yeah. Athena's like, stop. Yeah.
Basically, this is, if you guys don't, listeners don't know what this retelling is, it's the origin story of Dionysus. So his mother is killed by Zeus because she asks for him to unveil his like true godly form after Hera convinces her to do so while disguised as her handmaiden. And because she is immortal, she dies immediately and is like basically struck by lightning, incinerated. And Zeus is so upset by it that he basically revives her and her son, who turns out to be Dionysus, as gods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They really should have had use for the expression fuck around and find out back then.
Yeah, because she kept saying like, he loves me, he loves me. And I'm like, as a person who's read enough Zeus stories, I'm like, he does not love you.
Yeah. Well, I also like that you see how calculating Uriel is, because the princess's brother is like pursuing her and she's like, okay, but I could have it better.
Yeah, she talks about the price of her virginity and won't give it up to just anyone because she knows it makes her undesirable if she isn't a virgin. And I'm like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You learn a lot. It's kind of where the sisters start to become individuals, is in Crete instead of the three.
Yeah. And I do like how it shows them sort of like existing in the patriarchal system. This book is definitely not a story about activists, which I think is like very realistic. It's a story about these three women just trying to exist and advance in the society they live in, which in ancient Greece is super problematic and patriarchal, and sex and sexual assault and pursuant and virginity based. And they deal with that in their own ways.
And in the aftermath of all of this, the three of them go to Athens. They go to the big city to live out their dreams. Mm-hmm. And they end up staying with the king of Crete's friends, who are artists. And they kind of continue to grow apart. Medusa becomes a devotee of Athena. Athena starts learning music with the artists because she's like, what do I do when my sisters aren't here? Because she is not an individual. And Uriel's just kind of like fishing for Poseidon and checking up, weirdly hanging behind portraits in whorehouses, learning about sex. What'd you think about how their paths suddenly just went like totally different directions?
So I feel like this section is where I kind of fell a little bit in love with Uriel because I loved the way she went with it. And I felt like I just loved like her being so analytical and being like, this is my mission, this is my goal. And I really want to learn about this part of life somehow. And I thought like the characters she met, like, were like such a lively and interesting part of the story. I also thought it was really smart how it kind of sets up her finding out what Medusa and Athena are really up to together. And the part where the former acolyte who has been punished is in the whorehouse was like so sad that I think it was a wonderful like set up for some of the most impactful parts of the story.
Yeah, I loved Uriel going there to learn how to please a god. Please a man is what she covers it as, but learning the art of pleasure, but she gains some humanity from it because she kind of just watches these women. They have power, but they're pretty powerless as well because men are paying to have sex with them, and they get to kind of they know pleasure, but they're not in power or in control of their lives. And then you
Women are
see.
most in control when they are actively having sex with a man.
Yes. And then you see the last one she sees is the former acolyte of Athena, who is basically brutally raped by these men. And they find out her tongue has been cut out. And it's where Uriel's like, oh shit, like that's horrendous, and this is what could happen.
I liked that Athena was finding herself, and I felt sad for her when this part all crumbled around her because her sisters are stupid.
Yes.
But that's me relating to older sister vibes.
See, I related a lot more to oh my God, Uriel. I feel like my youngest sister is like the peacemaker, and then me and my other sister are like the antagonists. And so, yeah, I liked not that again, not that I'm like a huge fan of Uriel because she makes a lot of choices, but I related more to her.
Well, and I'm not saying I'm a total Sfino either because she's a stick in the mud. She's pretty boring, but like her concern for her sisters trumps all other things. And so she like has no identity without them. And so I was like, oh, she's finding art. This is amazing. And then they're like, dang it, now we have to leave in raw gorgons.
Yeah, it starts her journey into finding her voice through music and through writing and learning that she can be a powerful woman almost, which I really appreciated. And I think that sets it up for the rest of the book. It's kind of a boring part almost, even though like it's kind of beautiful, but it's pretty boring compared to what Uriel and Medusa are doing. But it sets up her character for the rest of the book.
Also, I felt so sad for her instructor who loses her like beloved child because he gets
F
wrapped
you.
up. Which I'm sorry, was a part where I was really mad at Medusa because I was like, why are you stringing this boy along? Like, it was just, I was mad at all of them at different points, but.
You're extra mad at Medusa because this leads into the next discussion point. Medusa's gay. Medusa is a lesbian. She loved the princess, and now she is doing things with Athena, and that's really what being a maiden in her temple apparently is all about. And she's the chosen one of Athena's loves. But then Poseidon finds out and knows he can torture Athena that way and rapes her. And so Athena's like, well, now you're tainted, and turns her into a gorgon. So no one else can have her, but Athena doesn't want her either. So what do we think about this? Everything kind of the big climax before their life comes to ruin.
So painful.
Well, and the
It
fact,
was heart-wrenching.
yeah, and the fact that Uriel's the one who told Poseidon that she saw Athena and Medusa getting it on in the temple, And so he was like, oh, I know what to do with this information. So he rapes her sister inside of Athena's temple.
It is such a deep and heartbreaking betrayal. And it's probably one of the only times in all of this you feel true pretty for Uriel, because she actually like didn't mean to do that and like trusted the wrong person. And she's so in love with Poseidon that you also do kind of like, because you know Poseidon is a bad guy the whole time. Like the idea that like gods rape women is like not new. They all know that that happens. And Uriel like is in love with him anyway. And then obviously it like ruins that for her, because he did like the most unspeakable, horrible thing to her sister. But and then the book just like carries on. Do you know, like it was just, I feel like this author like pushes the pain button and then does not take her finger off of it until the end of the book.
Well, and then Uriel's so complex because she both feels guilt, also blames Medusa for Poseidon going after her, and then also blames Poseidon for the position they've been put in, and blames Athena for the position they've been put in. So she feels a lot of emotions that are conflicting.
And like, they feel sad for their sister, but they're also now these hideous banished creatures who can't be around the humans they love so dearly. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's so many emotions. And then you find out Medusa's pregnant.
Yeah.
And they're on this island, just the three of them. And it gets weird then.
Yes. That was the part, which this part is true to the mythology, but I was just like, ugh. Like she's murdered and then the children come out of her neck and then they're banished, and I was like,
they're like a horse and a giant
Pegasus and a giant a cyclops
come out of her neck. Super weird. I do want to rewind just a bit. So you get these two perspectives we've talked about, first person and third person. At the beginning of each chapter is a song or poem that you learn is from the people they stayed with in Athens. And it kind of helps tell the story and tell you what you're going to get in that chapter, summarize the one before it. But then there's also interspersed little snippets of Perseus coming on the scene. And you kind of find out why Perseus ends up being the demigod hero he is, and how he ends up going to get Medusa's head. What did you think about like those other little snippets of the story interspersed? Was it too much? Did you like them?
I didn't mind them because I think it humanized Perseus, because he could have just been the straight up villain, but he's this 14-year-old boy who vomits as soon as he's seen what he's done. And then run, but he's also a coward who then runs off with her head to give it back to a king to, in a theory, save his mother. So it's all just kind of, it humanizes him, which I think is an important part to do, because I think it's giving him more justice than he deserves, but it's also like interspersing the mythology told by men.
The part that I really liked about it is his story is really rooted in his mother's story, and his mother is raped by Zeus. And so I felt like that was a great way to keep the book focused on the stories of women and the sort of theme of how women deal with their position in this society and how they move forward, how they deal with the consequences they're left with. And so like, cause this is a book about women, this is a book about women's stories. And so I think it like turned even Perseus and his actions into part of like a women's story instead of making him like a main character.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of along the same lines as Catherine. Like, I didn't mind them, and they helped tell the story without taking away from the story. I agree with that, Casey. So, I don't know. I liked it. Yeah. It was well done. If it wasn't well done, I would have hated it.
Yes. Okay. So, what did you think of the sisters' reactions when Medusa is killed?
Well, first of all, they just look at the kids and go, be free.
Yeah, I was like very confused by that part.
You were like, go away.
And then Sina regrets that. Like, Sina was like, we should have like looked after them.
Yeah, that was super weird. And they were just basically so overwhelmed with emotions from everything that happened to them. And then with that, that they were like, we don't know how to cope with this. Please just leave.
Yeah.
And they very much so become separate again. Like they weren't, this wasn't a bonding experience for them for sure until later.
Some part of Uriel sees the children come out of Medusa's neck and is like, yeah, I want me some of that.
I think
that was super.
Yeah, but I kind of understood it.
Super messed up.
That's what I love most about this book. It's these horrible things. Like, I'm like, what Uriel did is not excusable, like, especially to like us mortals, like our mortal mind, our mortal perception of time. But the author like makes it so you understand her choices, even if you don't like them. Right. And to a degree, you can sympathize with her, even though you're still so horrified by her choices. And so it was just like a tragedy that just like kept being tragic. Like it just kept tragedying.
Because yeah. Right. Like Sfino's rampage where she goes and tries to find who's responsible is totally like you could totally see that coming. Like that's reasonable. The what Uriel does is she now knows never to trust a god. So I'm going to use a god, specifically Poseidon, to get pregnant so I can have a son or have a daughter that I can love unconditionally or can unconditionally love me. And like, I have this thing that is mine.
And she always wanted to be a mom.
She always wanted to be a mom. And so, but she does it in a way to where Poseidon both keeps coming back, but also is never like vengeful against her because she pushes him away while also bringing him forward without offending him. And so I think
it's she becomes something he can't quite have.
Yes. Yeah.
And it frustrates him.
It like means they're like tied together for eternity because he can never give up the chase, but he's also done something that means he can never win her heart. And so that's the part where you kind of respect her, because even though she does things that like we would never do, like you would never have sex with someone who raped your sibling. Like it's just like so horrific. But you can see how Uriel, like you said, Catherine, is like, I am going to get what I need and I want from this man, but he does not own me and he's not giving that, getting that part of myself. And I think the sentence that refers to it in the book is she says, because she does feel grief over what she's done and guilt over what she's done. She says, like, Medusa would have forgiven me his father if she could have met my son. Basically, like, Medusa would have loved and cared for my son and would have forgiven me for, like, you know, who is the father. And I just thought that was like so painful but good.
Yeah, and that's the Orion, her son, is what brings her and Sfino back together, even though Sfino's very upset about her choices.
Mm-hmm.
It's the raising of him, even though he is kind of immortal. So they have to cover their heads to not turn him to stone. They raise him together, which I think is very cute. And I liked that.
It's because they've always been three, and now they're three again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aww. Yeah. But yeah, extremely different coping mechanisms.
yeah, to say the least.
Yeah. But it was kind of cool because the anger, Sfino finally like felt something and did something and found her wings.
Also, I think one of my favorite like book plots is when the characters get what they want, not in the way they wanted it. And that's kind of what happens to Uriel, is she gets what she wants, but like so, so far removed from like any sort of way she wanted to experience it. And so it was so good.
Yeah. I liked the two. So in the end, like they all kind of make their decisions. And there's like this, it's always been three. And then you have like the three main elements. So like
Uriel
fades into the sea to because she has nothing left she needs to accomplish and doesn't want immortality anymore. She's always loved the sea. Spino like flies away and is supposedly still bopping around today. And then you've got Medusa, who's a part of the land, basically.
Yeah.
What do you think of that lovely little triangle finish?
Poetic, satisfying, sad.
Yeah, it was like very bittersweet.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not a happy ending, but it's you're content with the ending because it's very much so like they are a part of the things that they loved and they are still together even in death slash not death. Because like Medusa kind of comes to Uriel and visions that she finds out she can just fade into the sea. There's an assumption that they are together in death.
Mm-hmm. They sort of like all finally make their peace with everything. So I think as a reader, you're left with that, like Caitlin said, that sort of bittersweet feeling of resolution.
To totally kill the mood, can you guess which part made me saddest?
Oh, then that one, the animal. Yeah.
When they killed Orion's doggy.
Yeah.
I was like, no.
I'm sorry. In a book with the most like brutal, horrific rape I've ever read, that cannot have been the part that made you the saddest.
I have to basically like wall off all the other ones. It's the only one I allowed myself to feel. Like, I didn't cry. I was just like, not the dog.
I mean, yeah. I knew the story of Orion, so I knew that it was coming, but
I really don't think I knew he had a dog.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
That was interesting how it all the myths tie together, and you always forget that Greek myths aren't just a bunch of random stories. Like, it's one big mythos.
Yes.
Yeah, the author did her due diligence and her research in connecting all of these, because these have never been connected before, let's be real.
Right. No. Speaking of, for my book recommendation, I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to recommend it. Comes out next year. The author's second book, Mother of Rome. I will be picking it up. It is the origin story of Romulus and Remus and their mom. And I am all in if she keeps doing tying all the Greek myths together like this and giving us the girl power back. We can read it together. I'm recommending it for myself, too.
I'm going to read it as well, because that sounds amazing. And as a Latin person who took Latin for 4 years, yeah, I've heard that story many a time. So it'll be super interesting. I am a nerd. If our listeners didn't know that already, yeah, me, Catherine, nerd. But yeah, I'm going to recommend Circe before Casey can. Circe by Madeline Miller. Very similar to this book. If you like this book, you will like that book.
I am struggling to think of a recommendation.
That's why I picked one that wasn't out yet, because I knew everyone was going to choose Circe.
I was trying not to choose Circe. So this book leaves you with such a feeling of like devastation that like I finished it and I literally think I just like stared at my ceiling for 30 minutes. Like, and I'm trying to think of other books that have left me with that emotion. I actually think Song of Achilles, which is the other Madeline Miller book, left me with like closer to that emotion.
Also very bittersweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I've mentioned this book earlier in this podcast and I have recommended it before, but Silence of the Girls by Pat Barker. It is a very slow read, and it's long, so I don't think the pacing is as good, but it's the story of the overtaking of Troy from the perspective of the princess, or like one of the other cities they overtake before they overtake Troy. I don't remember, but she's obviously becomes a slave. And so it leaves you, it's like with that very similar feeling of like devastation, but like acceptance. So those are my recommendations.
I recommend Not Being a Woman in the Greek prime.
Never be a woman if possible.
Yeah. whenever I feel like every time men are asked the question of what period of time they want to live in, it's always the Roman Empire around this time. And I'm like, nah.
What's that meme? Good. Another man just thinking about the Roman Empire.
Period.
Over here thinking about the Greeks and how terrible they were to women.
Yeah.
The Greeks are a Roman Empire.
Right. Well, hey, J.A. Bear's coming for them next. So yeah, these are our opinions. We want you to disagree. We want you to engage with us. Give us a book recommendation. Also give us a rate and review. You can find us in general at Busy Girls Pod online. I think that's it. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.